This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Good afternoon. This is Stan Yanchis, and I'm sitting in today for Steve Shoemaker, who is busy being grandpa. But I believe Steve will be back next week. Our topic today is, as advertised, the potential impact of the newly chosen Pope Francis on local Catholic parishes. And our guests are Father George Rem, senior priest and priest emeritus, pastor emeritus of St. Patrick's Parish in Urbana, and Father Joel Phelps, parochial vicar of St. Patrick's Parish in Urbana. Welcome, Father Rem.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
And welcome, Father Phelps.
Pleasure to be here as well.
Well, let's let our listeners get to know a little bit about you before we jump in on our topic. Father Phelps, could you tell us a little bit about yourself and about your journey to becoming a priest?
Sure. So I'm one of, as of now, the newest priest in the diocese. I was ordained last May, May 26th. Yeah. So a week from today, I'll have made a full year as a priest.
All right.
It's actually, we celebrate Pentecost today. My first Mass was Pentecost Sunday. So this is now the first Mass that I've celebrated twice as a priest. But I was a student at Monticello High School, is where I grew up. Then I went to the University of Illinois and lived at the Newman Center for a couple of years. And from there, discerned after 2 years there, beginning of a calling, and entered seminary. And then was just ordained, as I said, last year. And I'm assigned here at St. Patrick's and also at St. Mary's in Champaign. So.
All right. Well, thank you much. And I might mention to the listeners, I know some are aware, that I'm a parishioner of St. Patrick's Parish, so I've had the opportunity to hear you deliver your homilies and have the opportunity to see you work with some young people. And I know you also have some talents as a musician, and you had your first acting experience with the youth group this year. So,
coached by yourself.
It's been a busy, busy first year. Father Rem, your ministry has been going on a little longer than Father Phelps. Can you please tell our listeners a little bit about your journey to becoming a priest and give us a snapshot of your very meaningful career?
Well, I've been a priest for 53 years almost, and so a little longer than Joel here. But it's a journey that began probably when I was in fourth grade. My local pastor used to ask me as I served Mass for him, George, would you be thinking perhaps you'd like to be a priest? He was Irish, as you can tell.
Yes.
And so after high school, I entered the pre-seminary, 2 years of study at St. Bede Junior College, and then 6 years of study at St. Paul Seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota. I was ordained May 29th, 1960, and began serving at a very large parish in Bloomington, Illinois, Holy Trinity Parish near the downtown area. I was in that first assignment for 9 years, and wonderful experience because of the fact that we had a high school, a grade school, and many hospitals and nursing homes and all the activities that you would want. Sometimes at those times we were sort of ordained to be all things to everyone. And I was an athletic director for about 5 or 6 years at Central Catholic High School. At that time, it was Trinity High School, local parish high school that became then a community high school. After those 9 years, I was asked to do some work for the Diocese of Peoria in the area of liturgical and sacramental spirituality. As the changes came from Vatican Council II, the direct impact was on the liturgy, and so we needed someone who could help to begin to bring our priests up to date on the changes that were going to take place, not just then in 69 with the English Mass and the Mass facing the people, but also every year another sacrament was revised somewhat and so on. Oh. So I did that work for 7 years and then became pastor at Visitation Church in Kewaunee, Illinois. Again, I was there for 10 years, during which time we had to merge four parishes down to two, and usual problems, of course, trying to do that. Mm-hmm. But it was a marvelous experience of, at that time, beginning to work with lay people in parish councils, things that had not been done before much like that. And I thoroughly enjoyed that. After 10 years at Kewaunee, I was transferred here to St. Patrick's in Urbana, and I served here for 18 years and retired when I reached the age of 70, mm-hmm. and have been helping out on weekends at different churches in the area, but primarily up at Thomasboro, Rantoul, and occasionally helping with the Hispanic Mass at St. Mary's in here in Champaign.
So retired does have a different meaning for a priest than it does for most. I think the title is senior priest, but you're still actively, celebrating Mass. And I know you certainly serve in the role as an advisor, to others. And you mentioned to me in a conversation that you're going to be you're writing some thoughts about Vatican II, which you mentioned. So it sounds as though you're keeping quite busy in retirement.
St. Patrick's has a wonderful instrument of communication. Yeah. It's called In Focus.
Yes.
And so I was just asked recently to write an article with regard to the beginnings of changes in the church, especially with the Latin Mass going to English. And so I've just written an article on that, and that will appear shortly. And then I will do some follow-up on the changes and the effect of Vatican II, I think, on our church through the years.
Well, Steve was very excited when I told him that you were one of the potential guests, that we were there, because you have such a rich, diverse, and meaningful career. And Father Phelps, we to come in here with your very first year in the priesthood. And also, we might share with our listeners, that if you don't mind, that this is your first radio show.
It is. Have mercy on me.
We'll be excited. There's a wonderful audience here. And again, in a short while, we'll begin taking calls. Well, we're going to try to focus this show on Pope Francis, but there's just been such an overwhelming amount of media attention been given to both the historical resignation of Pope Benedict and the subsequent selection of Pope Francis. But we're going to try to focus, if we can, our conversation on the impact of a pope on local Catholic parishes. And now, given the range of potential topics and related topics, we certainly may wander around well. But before I think we get into some questions about Pope Francis, I'd like to ask you both, starting with you, Father Phelps, about, your personal influence that a pope may have had upon you. So, Father Phelps, is either Pope John Paul II or Pope Benedict, the two popes during your lifetime, played any roles in your becoming a priest or in your spiritual life?
Actually, very much so. Pope Benedict, the day that he was elected, was actually the first day I began discerning seminary. That it wasn't necessarily a specific thing that he had said or anything I'd read about that, but just that sense, I guess I had heard the sense he was getting towards senior status, so to speak. He was looking forward to spending some time more with reflection to work on his writings, his work as a theologian. And to me, it really struck me when he was elected that now he's willing to undertake this task. And I think it was the first time I began, I had maybe had the maturity to see him becoming the pope as something other than becoming a king or something that would be a great, joyful ruling over all his obedient subjects and things, but seeing it really as an act of laying down of service of his life for the church. And it began to just spark, I think, that thought, well, what must it be like for any priest to make that decision to give over his life and service to others in this particular way through the ordained ministry? And that was the first time I kind of had that interior response of, that seems like something attractive. That seems like something I would like to do, maybe I feel called to do with my life. So from that initial spark just of the fact of his election and his all the interest that was going on, I was a student at the University of Illinois at the time, living in the Newman Center. So we had bulletin boards and things at the Newman Center that kept us updated in a way I wouldn't have been probably if I was still in high school at the time. Then from there, I came to get to know the popes, John Paul II especially, through our seminary studies and through reading. A lot of times we would read things they wrote, obviously, as they would give addresses or major encyclicals or things like that, and really came to appreciate them. And I think in many ways they were strong theological and spiritual guides for myself and many of the current seminarians during our times of study.
Yes, I think we're going to come back a little bit later to that. I don't know that all of our listeners, but I'm certainly sure some realize that both Pope John Paul II and Pope Benedict were prolific theological scholars and writers, and with that. Father Rem, you have a few more popes to think about, but same question. How have the popes influenced you directly over your lifetime?
Well, I go back to Pope Pius XII, actually, growing up. I would say not too much influence directly. You know the name of the person, but nothing much about him. I think it was mainly through a couple of encyclicals that he wrote, Mystici Corporis, the concept of the mystical body of Christ. That did have some influence on me, as well as a couple other of his writings. But John the 23rd, who came after him, certainly had a tremendous influence on my priesthood. When I stopped to look back, I celebrated Mass in Latin with my back to the people in a subdued voice, probably for almost 9 years. And when I entered the priesthood, I had no concept that I would ever celebrate Mass other than the Tridentine Rite, the Latin Rite since the 16th century. When Pope John the 23rd proposed a Vatican Council, again, I didn't know very much about what that would mean or how it would influence my life, but there was a term, aggiornamento, an upbringing or an updating of the church, kind of bringing it somewhat into the modern world. And in response to the challenges of our modern world, that was quite a challenge. And to talk about opening the windows to let in the fresh air and so on. But I guess where the influence of John the 23rd is felt in my life mainly has been in my worship life as a priest and the way in which I would lead a congregation in prayer and worship. When we turned the altar around in the sense of instead of facing east with the people at my back and being a leader of prayer in that orientation, now to face the people as a leader of worship. They were no longer just present at the Mass I was saying. We were celebrating Mass together as a congregation. To become a leader of prayer in that sense is quite a challenge and quite a different way of being a celebrant of Mass. And, of course, then with the introduction of the vernacular languages for celebration of Mass and of the admission of many lay people into lay ministries, such as lectors, Eucharistic ministers, greeters, and so on, it began to really change the whole context of our worship. And to look out at that congregation and to see them as the people of God gathered in prayer and worship with me, and I am a leader of worship, but I am by no means the only worshiper. We are together in the celebration of the Eucharist, and that has been a tremendous import in my priesthood. There are other things, of course, that came out of the impetus of Vatican II. But remember, John the 23rd only began the council. Right. He died before even the first document came forth from it. So most of the follow-up to or the completion of the council and the follow-up came under Paul VI. Again, I would say a lot of influence there because he tried to follow, I think, what was the spirit of John the 23rd, and with some degree of opposition sometimes within, you know, anytime there's change, you're not going to please everybody.
Some historians would say, and theologians say, a great deal of opposition.
So I would say his influence was very strong, too. I remember as a young priest, Joel would not maybe could possibly envision this, but we had to come back every year for at least 5 years after ordination for what were called clergy exams.
Oh.
We had to update ourselves, and we had to pass certain tests and so on. And I remember Monsignor Carton, who was a great leader of our diocese at one time. He had one section, and he asked us to explain collegiality and subsidiarity. Two words I really didn't know. They had just kind of come out of the council, and he wanted us to have some sense of what that meant. And so I was brought face-to-face within those first years of my priesthood with some new concepts. By no means has those two thoughts been implemented too much within the church yet. But we have it did influence us quite a bit, especially when you think of the role of bishops with regard to the Pope and with regard on the parish level, parish councils with regard to the pastor, different ways in which we would govern or lead the church.
Mystery plays a great role in the Catholic Church, and I think for those who are not Catholic, the Church itself sometimes is mysterious. And your comments about your own experiences over the years, I think, really illustrate that the Pope, for you, several popes have been spiritual leaders and spiritual guides as you have gone through your own so much in kind of not necessarily that public perception. Before we move to Pope Francis, I do want to remind our listeners that Keeping the Faith is a live show, and they are welcome to call in with any questions they might have. Locally, you can call 333-9455. That's 333-9455, or long distance, 1-800-222-9455. And we actually had a caller in already that's left us a question. And Father Rem, I'm going to direct this back to you because it's kind of getting involved with some of the things that you mentioned. Our caller said that the Mass was recently revised by Benedict with changes of phrases for the congregation. And I'm not sure that's exactly accurate, but I'll let you respond to that. Do you see Francis changing that back to the more user-friendly vernacular? And I'm not sure exactly what's intended there, but we know that the language in the Mass in specific parts has changed recently.
Yes, that change came about because of a document that said that translations had to be a direct translation from the Latin, not a verber, a paraphrase or anything like that. It had to be a direct translation. And so many people are sometimes finding these direct translations rather stilted, and that's probably maybe where our caller is coming from. Do I see a change? Probably not for some time. The American bishops did have a translation in preparation for many years, but that was set aside when that new document came out. And so this is a totally new translation, and there's, you know, controversy about it. Personally, I do find some of it is difficult to convey because of the long sentence structures and sometimes some of the problems involved with that. But we all have to try to do the best we can, and people had to make changes in the past, I guess we'll continue right. having to make them.
Well, I've just noticed that Mass, it seems to be less of a problem. More people are participating and not necessarily reading. So I think that we're making peace with consubstantial in the thing. Moving to Pope Francis, I did want to take a moment to read this little description of the job description of a pope out of Witness to Hope, the biography of Pope John Paul II by George Weigel, who also noted writer, wrote a biography of Pope Benedict. And he said the papacy is unlike any other office in the world, and not simply because of its institutional longevity. The pope is a bridge between God and humanity, between the Roman Catholic Church and other Christian churches and ecclesiastical communities, between the Roman Catholic Church and Judaism, between the Roman Catholic Church and other world religions, between the Roman Catholic Church and the worlds of political, economical, and cultural power, between the center of the church's unity and the College of Bishops dispersed in local churches throughout the world. As the custodian of an authoritative teaching tradition, the pope is also, according to Catholic theology, a bridge between historical humanity and the truth about its origin, nature, and destiny. And then he kind of sums it up here in a direct sentence. To be pope is to take on a task that is, by precise theological definition, impossible. As we move to Pope Francis here, I think maybe I would keep this this question with you. If we can take a look, how do you feel that Pope Francis is going to address this impossible job? Is his first few days, or your initial feelings and thoughts and about his selection, and I guess in the vernacular, how's he doing so far? And Father Phelps, why don't I throw that over to you?
Sure. I think, yeah, that phrase of the impossible task, the sense that what he's called to do is to be that, in a certain sense as any Christian, but in a particular sense through his office as the Bishop of Rome, the Pope, to be that source and that builder of unity, that bridge builder. That's the origin etymologically of pontifex or pontiff. That's even his Twitter handle on the social media. To be a bridge builder, even in the parish sense, you know, of working with everything in a parish, you see the difficulty of that and the necessity to rely on the grace of God. And I think we see in Francis a real clear and evident trust and reliance on God. He will do as well as he can, but then, like John the 23rd, at the end of the day, it's your church, Lord, that he, I think we see a great lightness in regards to his own self-esteem, that he knows that he himself is not the perfect human being that will be able to fulfill this task in a purely human way, but that he knows that he is, he speaks a lot of mercy, he's a beloved son of God, and that coming from that context of that real relationship that he has with God, I think he's going to approach it in a very ardent way, in a very strong way, but not coming from his own strength, but coming from a trust and confidence that he can't screw anything, he can't screw it up too bad, that trust that God is always going to be there to provide and protect him.
Okay. Father Rem?
I guess I'm very hopeful, at least from the beginnings here. This man seems to be humble. He has a great poverty of spirit in the way he lives his lifestyle. He has a concern for the poor around the world, but he also has a great warmth, and that comes through. His very first act before God's people was to ask them to pray for him before he gave his blessing. And what an example that was. That first Sunday after his election, before I gave the last blessing of the Mass, I asked the people to bless me because of that example, I guess. I haven't done it since, but but nevertheless, that it did touch me, and I think it touched many people. So I'm just glad I don't have a job description that even began to approach that.
It took quite a bit just to read it.
Yeah, yes, indeed. The influence of this man is going to be spectacular, but he will do it, I think, in a very humble way. And I only hope that those that will assist him and help him to do this will be as warm and kind and gentle as he is.
Well, he's receiving a welcome and an approval rating that in the United States I don't have. I just have, in fact, yesterday the Pew Forum on Religious Life and on Religion and Public Life released a survey, and that 44% of all U.S. adults were pleased with his selection, and breaking it down to Catholics, 73% of all Catholics were happy or very happy with his. And then Catholics who attend weekly Mass, 87% were happy. So he's obviously receiving a great deal of acceptance, and I know he's started with some things. One of the things that he's started with that seemed to be appealing to a lot of people is that breaking with several traditions, and I don't know that they're major traditions per se, but including wearing certain ceremonial attire, the vestments he chose, riding on the bus with his fellow bishops of the church, rather than taking a separate vehicle. And I was wondering, I'll stay with you, Father Rem, here, what you think about such behavior and what it might suggest about Pope Francis.
Well, it appears that maybe he's less influenced by pomp and circumstance than past popes perhaps have been. And that appeals to people, certainly. I think one of the things that has changed in the perception of people to the papacy has been modern means of communication. Mm-hmm. We go back actually to John Paul II and his many travels throughout the world, and the fact that the media followed him very carefully, and especially in his masses with youth, they became almost enthralled by this this old man somehow reaching out to young people and they responding to him.
Rock star was used at times to describe him.
And then, of course, now Benedict the 16th and now Pope Francis beginning to use modern means of communication, even a Twitter feed, is that
yes.
right?
Twitter feed, yes. Uh-huh.
And, of course, if anyone is strongly influenced, wants to find out what's going on, you can get on the Internet and dial up the Vatican and see the latest pronouncements or sermons and so on of the Pope. It's almost instantaneous communication. And that, I think, has changed the platform, if you will, of this pontiff in terms not only of Catholic people, but of the world. And the world kind of needs right now some spiritual leaders they can look to. Yeah. And I'm really hopeful for Francis as a model.
And you, Father Phelps?
I think that I'd agree on that same point of modern communication, changing of the platform and things, that Pope Benedict is a beautiful writer. He's got a very deep humility and simpleness to him, but it comes in a much more, or I should say maybe a less accessible or quickly stated sense, that having read a good number of his books and listened to lots of his addresses, you can develop a sense from him. But I don't think he'd do well on a lot of talk shows, for example, where the TV, where the quick cuts, what do you say? Well, let's give a balanced and insightful No, they want, kind of the quicker. And I think Pope Francis just has this beautiful and amazing ability to say a lot quickly and powerfully in a way that really touches people. And that he's able, I think he's trust a gift. The guidance of the Holy Spirit, he's got those gifts that just really are tailored, I think, to the modern environment so much. He's able to look past things that aren't as essential, maybe. He goes, what's more important than, red shoes and Pope mobiles and things? He's able to look past some of those things that maybe were distractions in ways, and to refocus the message, or he's, when they talk about reframing the issue or things like that, to get back to those things that are the more central. One thing I did want to mention in regards to that, just in terms of a couple of different resources for getting to know Pope Francis, is the Pope gives addresses, Angelus or Regina Caeli, but they're Sunday addresses that are then put out in short little talks. And then on Wednesdays, he gives general audiences. And then Pope Francis, as he's not living in the papal apartments, he celebrates a more public mass. So they actually have been covering summaries of his daily homilies, which we now have access to. And those can be accessed through the Vatican News website, which is news.va, or also the CatholicNewsAgency.com. All that spelled out. It's another good source of finding quickly and easily these different talks and audiences and such that he gives.
Well, you can, I can just hear the enthusiasm and excitement in both of your voices, and I share that. And I think many people did actually when watched on television when he asked for the blessing, teared up. It was, a humility and just a certain a personal approach that one did not expect to come out. But I'm going to violate my own role. I think we can see my own rule, here, about trying to stick close to the parish, because we've mentioned Pope Benedict several times. And although the scope certainly has been addressed by the national and the world media often, I would like to get your views. This historical, the resignation of Pope Benedict, and not so much to explore that, although please feel free if you want to comment perhaps on that, but the relationship that he is going to be living there with Pope Francis, and Pope Francis has embraced him so warmly. There was a picture circulated that when, Pope Benedict came back and the greeting, and he just seems to embrace him and welcome him. How do you see this relationship, and how might it affect Pope Francis, in any way that this good thing? And I'll go to you, Father Rim, with that.
That's maybe a little hard to say. Both of them are going to have to get used to a brand new circumstance.
Yeah.
But I think, hopefully, Benedict XVI, in being the first pope to resign for 1,000 years,
long
is a significant indication, I think, of the man's own humility to step down from the office of such authority and power, and to accept retirement. Mm-hmm. Turn to prayer and writing as his final missionary or journey or mission for the church. But I think he will step aside and allow Francis to take his particular gifts and talents for the good of the church. And mm-hmm. and I don't think he'll stand in the way. Mm-hmm. And I think Francis is a strong enough individual person that he will bring his own style. He won't simply try to be another Benedict. He will be Francis. And, the very choice of the name Francis,
yes,
kind of hints that it's a different style. Francis was a man of humility and poverty and but strong character, a very strong man who was able to begin a brand new order of the church, mm-hmm. and to bring a whole new spirit in religious life. I think that Francis, the new pope, will follow somewhat with that characteristic choice. That's the kind of person he will be. One of the things that he's already done that I think is very significant, to ask for the advice of a number of bishops from representatives around the whole world to advise him, and maybe here we'll begin a sense of collegiality. Not that they come to listen to him, but that he is there to listen to them. Amen. And of course, you know, he brings his own experience of the third world yes. to this new office as he has an awareness that perhaps no pope before him has had of the missionary church and the needs of people in mission. And I just think that could be significant in a way to bring some adaptation to the church's response to people in Asia, in Africa, yes. in South America. And perhaps the church may become a little less Roman and perhaps a little more Catholic mm-hmm. because of his view.
I know many in the U.S. often there are views that the Catholic Church is, the American Church is a bit of a renegade from Rome. So you're saying the possible more of a reaching out across not just with the United States but the world. Father Phelps, any thought on that relationship between Pope Benedict Emeritus? Is the title going to be Emeritus? I believe
Pontiff Emeritus.
Pontiff Emeritus
is the title for him.
And Pope Francis?
I think that Pope Benedict said it very beautifully when he was giving an address to the College of Cardinals before the election. So this was before they'd begun the process. And he told them at the end of the talk that he, even now, pledges his obedience to the successor who is among us now, as he said. We don't know who it will be, but he's among us. And Pope Benedict is a man, I think, that doesn't just expect obedience of others and then turning it around can't give obedience, but I think he is very authentic in that sense of really seeking to cooperate with the mission of the church, the mission of the office of the Bishop of Rome. And I don't see him either in any sense presenting himself as an obstacle or a contrary voice to the Holy Father, but I think he's intending to follow through on those words of just giving his whole self and strength as he can to prayer and to support of the mission of Francis.
Okay, well, you know, he's, again, Pope Francis is a pope of many, many firsts. One of the things, he is the first Jesuit pope mm-hmm. that we've had, and then took Francis as a name. Obviously, the first pope from the Americas, you know, which obviously makes him the first Argentinian pope. And again, showing a great deal. I was wondering, I'd like to move here. There's such enthusiasm in your voice, and again, as the Pew Report suggests, you know, great initial reception to him, that respected Catholic writer Deacon Greg Condra recently wrote on his site, the Deacon's Bench, about the Francis effect on lapsed Catholics returning to the church. He cited a 2009 report from the Pew Forum on religion and public life that stated 1 in 10 American adults was raised Catholic but have broken with the church. He goes on to discuss and share some anecdotes about how Pope Francis' love for the poor and the humility that you've been discussing and mentioning are exciting many lapsed Catholics, and he has quite a few anecdotes and spurring returns to the church. Now, it's certainly too soon to make any overreaching conclusions, but do you think that Pope Francis may have this personal charisma and spirit to have an effect on lapsed Catholics?
I think that might depend a lot on the way in which he can reach them. If they're lapsed, that means they're not in church. In other words, that Father Phelps and I can't talk right. to them very well. That again is maybe the image of the Pope as presented through modern media would be the main access, I think, for him to reach those people. So I hope that there will be people who will be advising him, you know, in a wonderful way to reach out to those people and somehow to offer them once again the assurance of their welcome back into the fold. And I think, you know, he has been very gracious to those of other faiths as well, not just to the people of our own faith. He has friends in the Jewish community, in the Muslim community, and so on. And so here is a man who apparently has the ability, I think, to reach out. And I only hope that there will be listeners to that.
Father Maybe Phelps. Even today.
Yes.
Some listeners. I think that one of the refreshing things about Pope Francis is just that it's very clear that he doesn't really have anything he's worried about losing other than faith in Jesus Christ, obviously. But in terms of he has, I think the way you said it, speaking of coming from that missionary environment, he has a different sense of it that's refreshing to people. That sometimes, maybe in the West or America or Europe, Western Europe, you might say, there can easily be or perceived as a real concentration on things that aren't as important or minutiae or things like that. And that he really wants to go, as he said a number of times, to go out to the fringes of society. That he spoke in a different times in interviews or things he's given, that a church that doesn't go out of itself becomes sick. He calls that the self-referential church. And that I think that that weighs on people's minds and their sort of experience of the church, if they experience it as something that's maybe insular or something that's just concerned about its own internal difficulties and things, where he really wants a church, he says, that goes out and that it's this sense of freshness, of a change, of things that maybe have seemed onerous or things like that in the past. Just a new, he obviously has this great missionary and evangelism and this great desire to share and to find joy and happiness. And that I think people sense that's where he's has his interest and his focus. And maybe the other things that they had experienced as more of the focus before hopefully will not be as much of an obstacle for him.
Yeah. I might add a little something that just popped into my mind. When he presided at the Mass of the Oils during Holy Week, that's a traditional time when priests renew their commitment and so on. And Pope Francis challenged priests to smell like their people.
Yes.
Yeah. Which means they got to get out there.
Right.
So perhaps I was a little wrong when I said that Father Phelps and I can't reach people in the church. Perhaps we have to reach out. And maybe the Pope is challenging us somehow to do that outreach. And then I would like to say to the people of the parish, we can't do it alone. The people of the parish are the people who will rub elbows with these folks. They're in their own families. They're in their neighborhood, and they're at their workplace. And so if our own people can be filled with that enthusiasm of welcome and, hey, you know, why don't you come back and talk to us a little bit or something, or come and worship and share.
Well, one of the things, again, that we're hearing is great enthusiasm. Again, our topic focus was trying to take a look at how a pope, and specifically our new pope, Pope Francis, impacts, local parishes here in central Illinois, in the state of Illinois, in America, and around the world indifferently, and you both certainly have addressed this. I do want to encourage any callers who might have a question. We have with us today Father George Rem, senior priest, pastor emeritus of St. Patrick's Parish in Urbana in his 53rd year of the priesthood, and Father Joel Phelps, who is just completing his first year in the priesthood. So we have a pretty wide range to draw from. And again, those numbers are, if you're calling locally, 333-9455. That was 333-9455. Or if you're calling long distance, 1-800-222-9455. And you can listen online at www.com. www.illinois.edu. There is a live thing, and the show is archived. And if you have someone who you think would enjoy listening, please let them know that they could do that. Father Rem, I'm going to target off of your last question, because one of the things that Pope Francis has said early in his ministry that goes to your statement about getting out and smelling like the people, if we're going to be there to his priest, he said also that the church must be a mother, not a babysitter. So I'll go to you, Father Phelps, first with that. And what do you think, what is he saying with that comment? Or what might he be saying with that comment?
Just as a preliminary remark, this is, I think, a good example of the difference in this sort of maybe media presence that he has, where his daily homilies especially are filled with all of these wonderful, often very funny, the smell of the sheep, different humorous examples or sayings or things like that. They really have a richness and ability to strike powerfully in a short amount. And I think this is kind of continues well from what I was trying to reflect on a little bit earlier, is this desire not just to stay at home, to maintain the internal life of our parish, but a desire to bring in new life, that the mother generates new life, the mother does that. That's one aspect. There's lots of aspects to this comment, I think. That's one aspect I see kind of in connection with that. And also the sense that the mother is, I guess, maybe be an analog to Christ's parable in the gospel of the difference between the shepherd and the hired. There's a difference between the one who's the mother, who has, so this is another aspect of it, the great affection and tenderness that comes from the love and the desire for the greatest good their child can receive. That's different than the hired worker, so to speak. No offense to babysitters that are listening.
No, babysitters are essential, and I that's why I was curious. I want to make sure we're not insulting babysitters, because most of us who have children have indeed used babysitters over the years.
But just that sense of the church really to be able to be involved, you know, to the mother would sacrifice in ways that a babysitter we wouldn't expect to sacrifice for the children. Just that the church become a shepherd with the smell of the sheep, become a mother to get to know the needs and the desires and the hopes, and to seek to bring out what we believe the riches we have in Christ that respond to those needs and those hopes, to draw them into that fullness of life that we desire to find ourselves and we desire to share.
Yeah, thank you, Father Ram.
Well, I think a babysitter probably is satisfied if they can maintain peace for one evening.
Yes.
A mother has to not only love and care and be there, but the mother has also to let go. The mother has to develop that child into an adult, has to help them become an adult. A mother has to be able to challenge that person to become their own person, and then eventually has to step aside as that new life begins to take its own course. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, I think if the Pope is saying the church must be a mother, I don't see it's smothering, but rather somehow challenging her children to grow in the spiritual life and in the goodness, and to influence the world in which they will live beyond us.
Well, another one of comments he made certainly seems to suggest that he is moving in the direction of challenge. In one of his first official acts, Pope Francis administered the sacrament of confirmation on 44 people, including two teenagers from the United States. And in his homily, he told them to swim against the tide. It's good for the heart, but it takes courage. And I know I was a public school teacher here at Centennial High School for 27, 28 years, and I'm still spending some time in the schools. And one of my challenges was always to get students to take risks for their ego, to engage in what's going on. There's such powerful peer pressure. And you have both pointed out some of the very positive uses of the public media. We also know there are some negative or dark uses, even if you will, of the public media. So this really struck to my heart, both as a teacher, and as a Catholic. And what do you think? And Father Joe, I'll go back to you first. And as two young people, because I know that's becoming an important part of your ministry, that the comment like that would mean to swim against the tide. It's good for the heart, but it takes courage.
I think it reminds me of a statement that I think it's from G.K. Chesterton, but I don't have the reference with me, that only a living thing can go against the tide. Because I think that it's a way that he's maybe reframing the question, where I think very often we would see or maybe subconsciously think of living as a Christian as a sort of passive life, of we just kind of, we follow these rules. There's not really a sense that we're living our own life, that we kind of have to give up our life and embrace all these difficult and boring and burdensome rules to follow. But I think he wants to repropose following Christ as an act of courage and an act of, the opposite of an act of passivity, that it takes a certain strength, not just to, that in a certain sense, following, whether it's the exterior pressures of peer pressure, or whether it's those interior pressures that we all have from sinfulness for the quick and easy route, to challenge us against that, as exterior and interior presence, that really becomes more of a going with the tide, more of a conformity or more of a passiveness in regards to seeking outer life, and that actually to really live as a Christian is an act of great strength and courage. That he wants, I think, it reminds me of something that Pope Benedict said in his opening homily when he was elected, that as Christians we're not called to an easy life, but we're not created for an easy life. We're created for goodness, for greatness, for a great life, to be someone that is on fire and that sets others on fire. So I think that in that context, he really just wants to reframe or to open up a different way of seeing what it means to live the commandments, rather than giving away of our freedom, but rather a real empowering of our freedom to move towards a lasting and strong foundation of joy and peace in our life versus the passing joy or peace that comes from going with the flow of peer pressure or our passions or whims or things like that.
Working with the young people you've worked with, do you think that we all make a similar statement, but coming from the Holy Father, do you think it will make an impact on them? I know it's a little awkward for you to say, no, the Holy Father won't have an influence. But I mean, I look at, when work with young people, and sometimes it's there. I've always found that just honesty, but they have that detector. Adolescents, yes. Young adults feel, rely a great deal on that intuitive reaction. Is this the truth? Is this meaning they can be moved very powerfully when they feel that? Do you think that working with the young people you've worked with, that the Pope's making that statement and coming from him will have beyond the intellectual, grasp and thing, but in their hearts?
I think so. I think I've been very impressed by the youth we work with here. I don't know if any are listening or not, but I think we have a wonderful group of... I just came from the high school graduation of St. Thomas More, the part of it, but just a great desire for greatness, for a real a zeal for ideals, high ideals. And I think Pope Francis will reach out to that. Obviously, there's you always see the response, but I pulled a couple quotes here just looking through. I searched some of his recent talks, and actually at the end of many addresses, he specifically speaks to young people. I won't read them all here, but he many times will say, there are many young people here today. There are large numbers of, he appeals to them. And I'd like to speak especially to you young people. Be committed. And the square, I see there are many young people here. He's many times, he's noticing it. He's aware of them. And I think that if they encounter him as someone who really has a great respect and love for them, I think that's very powerful. He says, we must bet on the youth for the great ideals, is something he said. He really respects the gifts and the special strength of commitment that we get, comes from young people. And coming up just very shortly, and starting July 23rd, is going to be the first World Youth Day for Pope Francis. It'll be in Rio de Janeiro, the Brazil, the largest Catholic country by population. Also struggling with some that we have with lapsed Catholics or Catholics who don't really participate in a living way, maybe in the life of the parish. So I think that will be the first time where you can really see him spark. And, you know, being in seminary, I've heard a lot of vocation stories from my brother seminarians and things like that. And so many of them have been sparked by a World Youth Day they went to. Yeah. Or I studied in St. Louis at Kenrick. John Paul II came to visit in 1999. Different seminarians, that those things sparked that initial interest or that initial discernment that led to great changes in their lives, and then, of course, everyone that they interact with.
Thank you. Father Rem, I can let you speak to that, or we have a minute or so. If there's anything you haven't had the opportunity to reflect on Pope Francis or the impact a pope may have on a local parish, please take this time to do so.
I think continuing to challenge our young people to go against the tide, and the tide seems very strong today toward success, wealth, sensuality, and so on. To go against that tide is not easy in our society. I hope young people will hear the challenge, and also that they have courage enough to know that they can do it. And hopefully, you know, the Pope will be an instrument in reaching them, I hope.
Well, thank you. You both, I think, have been inspirational, if I may say so, in your own rights. I know there's some topics we didn't get to, but I hope that we have been able to share with our listeners a great deal of that. And I want to thank you personally for taking time, especially Father Phelps, because how many masses did you celebrate today? And you said only three. Those are 3-hour long masses, right? With the uses, and you had you were also out at the graduation ceremony, the commencement activities for St. Thomas More, and I believe you have some things to do after this. So it's very special to us and to our listeners. Steve will be back next week, and he did want me to let you know that he is going to have with him Dr. Shirley Blankenship talking about the HARP Legacy Program project, and that's Keeping the Faith, Sunday, May 26th, and he will be there. And we wish everyone a pleasant Memorial Day.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
This week in This American Life, the whole national conversation about climate change has been stuck for years now. Everybody knows where they stand. Everybody's heard all the arguments before. But some new things are happening at polar ice caps. The word Greenland, that's this week.
Saturday afternoon at 1 and Sunday evening at 6 on AM 580.
Hi, I'm Jim Fleming, host of To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI. Looking for something to talk about at your next party or around the water cooler on Monday morning? Check in on To the Best of Our Knowledge each week. Science and religion, rethinking animal intelligence, maybe how memory works. Fascinating discussion on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday evening from 7 to 9 on AM 580.
This American Life is on the schedule next. I'm Jason Croft. Glad you're with us this Sunday evening. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, WILL 580 AM and 90.9 FM HD3 Urbana. At 7 o'clock, it's the first hour of To the Best of Our Knowledge, where the topic is arts and crafts. Then in the second hour at 8 o'clock, quiet. That's the topic for that. At 9, it's New Dimensions, followed by Harry Shearer's Le Show at 10. Keep it tuned here all evening long.